other place, downtown maybe, or in the parking lot at the shopping center. Wouldn't someone have tagged it in the middle of the night? Vic asked. Probably, Mason said. Do you think she herself might have left it somewhere, Mr. Trenton? Then Vic remembered the needle valve. You look like something just clicked, Mason said. It didn't click, it clunked. The car isn't here because it's at the Ford dealership in South Paris. She was having carburetor trouble. The needle valve in there kept wanting to jam. We talked about it on the phone Monday afternoon. She was really pissed off and upset about it. I meant to make an appointment for her to get it done by a local guy here in town, but I forgot because... He trailed off, thinking about the reasons why he had forgotten. You forgot to make the appointment here in town, so she would have taken it to South Paris? Yeah, I guess so. He couldn't remember exactly what the run of the conversation had been now, except that she had been afraid the car would seize up while she was taking it to be fixed. Mason glanced at his watch and got up. Vic started to rise with him. Now, stay put. I just want to make a quick phone call. I'll be back. Vic sat where he was. The screen door banged closed behind Mason, a sound that reminded him so much of Tad that he winced and had to grit his teeth against fresh tears. Where were they? The thing about the Pinto not being here had only been momentarily promising after all. The sun was fully up now, throwing a bright rose light over the houses and the streets below and across Castle Hill. It touched the swing set where he had pushed Tad times without number. All he wanted was to push his son on the swing again, with his wife standing beside him. He would push until his hands fell off, if that was what Tad wanted. Daddy, I want to loop the loop. I want to. The voice in his mind chilled his heart. It was like a ghost voice. The screen door opened again a moment later. Mason sat down beside him and lit a fresh cigarette. Twin City Ford in South Paris, he said. That was the one, wasn't it? Yeah, we bought the Pinto there. I took a shot and called him. Got lucky, the service manager was already in. Your Pinto's not there, and it hasn't been there. Who's the local guy? Joe Camber, Vic said. She must have taken the car out there after all. She didn't want to, because he's way out in the back of the beyond, and she couldn't get any answer on the phone when she called. I told her he was probably there anyway, just working in the garage. It's this converted barn, and I don't think he's got a phone in there. At least he didn't the last time I was out there. We'll check it out, Mason said. But her car's not there either, Mr. Trenton. Depend on it. Why not? Doesn't make a bit of logical sense, Mason said. I was 95% sure it wasn't in South Paris either. Look, everything we said before still holds true. A young woman with a child needs a car. Suppose she took the car over to Twin City Ford and they told her it was going to be a couple of days. How does she get back? Well, a loaner. Or if they wouldn't give her a loaner, I guess they'd rent her one of their lease cars from the cheap fleet. Right, beautiful. So where is it? Vic looked at the driveway, almost as if expecting it to appear. There'd be no more reason for Kemp to abscond with your wife's loaner than there would be for him to abscond with her Pinto, Mason said. That pretty well ruled out the Ford dealership in advance. Now, let's say she takes it out to this guy Camber's garage. If he gives her an old junker to run around in while he fixes her Pinto, we're back at square one right away. Where's the junker? So, let's say that she takes it up there, and Camber says he'll have to keep it a while, but he's got nothing he can give her to get back to town in. So, she calls a friend, and the friend comes out to pick her up. With me so far? Yeah, sure. So, who was the friend? You gave us a list, and we got them all out of bed. Lucky they were all home, it being summer and all. None of them mentioned bringing your people home from anywhere. No one has seen them any later than Monday morning. Well, why don't we stop crapping around? Vic asked. Let's give Camber a call and find out for sure. Let's wait until 7, Mason said. That's only 15 minutes. Give him a chance to get his face washed and wake up a little. Service managers usually clock in early. This guy's an independent. Vic shrugged. This whole thing was a crazy blind alley. Kemp had Donna and Tad. He knew it in his guts, just as he knew it was Kemp who had trashed the house and shot his cum on the bed he and Donna shared. Of course, it didn't have to be a friend, Mason said, dreamily watching his cigarette smoke drift off into the morning. There are all sorts of possibilities. She gets the car up there, and someone she knows slightly happens to be there, and the guy or gal offers Mrs. Trenton and your son a ride back into town. Or maybe Camber runs them home himself. Or his wife. Is he married? Yes, nice woman. Could have been him, her, anyone. People are always willing to help a lady in distress. Yeah, Vic said, and lit a cigarette of his own. But none of that matters either, because the question always remains the same. Where's the fucking car? Because the situation's the same. Woman and kid on their own. She has to get groceries, go to the dry cleaners, go to the post office, dozens of little errands. If the husband was only going to be gone a few days, a week even, she might try to get along without a car. But 10 days or 2 weeks? Jesus, that's a long haul in a town that's only got one goddamn cab. Rental car people are happy to deliver in a situation like that. She could have gotten Hertz or Avis or National to deliver the car here or out to Camber's. So where's the rental car? I keep coming back to that. There should have been a vehicle in this yard, dig? I don't think it's important, Vic said. And probably it's not. We'll find some simple explanation and say, oy vey, how could we be so stupid? But it fascinates me strangely. It was the needle valve, you sure of that? Positive. Mason shook his head. Why would she need all that rigmarole about loaners or rental cars anyway? That's a 15-minute fix for somebody with the tools and the know-how. Drive in, drive out. So where's her goddamn car? Vic finished wearily. The world was coming and going in waves now. Why don't you go upstairs and lie down, Mason said. You look wiped out. No, I want to be awake if something happens. And if something does, somebody will be here to wake you up. The FBI's coming with a traceback system to hook up to your phone. Those people are noisy enough to wake the dead, so don't worry. Vic was too tired to feel much more than a dull dread. Do you think that traceback shit is really necessary? Better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it, Mason said, and pitched a cigarette. Get a little rest and you'll be able to cope better, Vic. Go on. All right. He went slowly upstairs. The bed had been stripped of the mattress. He had done it himself. He put two pillows on his side, took off his shoes, and lay down. The morning sun shone fiercely in through the window. I won't sleep, he thought, but I'll rest. I'll try to, anyway. 15 minutes. Maybe half an hour. But by the time the phone woke him up, that day's burning noon had come. Charity Camber had her morning coffee and then called Alva Thornton in Castle Rock. This time Alva himself answered. He knew that she had chatted with Bessie the night before. Nope, Alva said. I ain't seed hide nor hair of Joe since last Thursday or so, Charity. He brought over a tractor tire he fixed for me. Never said nothing about feeding Cujo, although I'd have been happy to. Alva, could you run up to the house and check on Cujo? Brett saw him Monday morning before we left for my sister's, and he thought he looked sick. And I just don't know who Joe would have gotten to feed him. After the way of country people, she added, no hurry. I'll take a run up and check, Alva said. Let me get those damn cacklers fed and watered, and I'm gone. That would be fine, Alva, Charity said gratefully, and gave him her sister's number. Thanks so much. They talked a little more, mostly about the weather. The constant heat had Alva worried about his chickens. Then she hung up. Brett looked up from his cereal when she came into the kitchen. Jim Jr. was very carefully making rings on the table with his orange juice glass and talking a mile a minute. He had decided sometime during the last 48 hours that Brett Camber was a close relation to Jesus Christ. Well, Brett asked. You were right. Dad didn't ask Alva to feed him. She saw the disappointment and worry on Brett's face and went on, but he's going to check on Cujo this morning as soon as he's got his chickens tended to. I left the number this time. He said he'd call back one way or the other. Thanks, Mom. Jim clattered back from the table as Holly called him to come upstairs and get dressed. Want to come up with me, Brett? Brett smiled. I'll wait for you, slugger. Okay. Jim ran out trumpeting. Mom, Brett said he'd wait. Brett's going to wait for me to get dressed. A thunder as of elephants on the stairs. He's a nice kid, Brett said casually. I thought, Charity said, that we might go home a little early, if that's all right with you. Brett's face brightened, and in spite of all the decisions she had come to, that brightness made her feel a little sad.
When?
He asked. How does tomorrow sound? She had been intending to suggest Friday.
Great, but...
He looked at her closely. Are you done visiting, Mom? I mean, she's your sister.